Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Under the Moon with Joni Ross and Pat McHugh. Let's start off with a beautiful song about the moon.
Somewhere there's music, how faint the tune. Somewhere there's heaven, how high the moon. There is no moon above when love is far away too, until it comes true that you love me as I love you. Somewhere there's heaven, it's where you are. Somewhere there's music, how near, how far. The darkest night will shine if you would come to me soon. Until you will, I'll steal my heart. How faint the tune, somewhere the seven, how high the moon. There is no moon above when love is far away too, until it comes true that you love me as I love you. Somewhere the seven, where you are. Somewhere there's music, how near, how far. The darkest night would shine if you would come to me too, until you will. Darkest night would shine if you would come to me soon. Until you will, I'll steal my heart. How high the moon.
That was Miss June Christie, How High the Moon. Just loved her. Hi, everyone. This is Joni Ross, astrologer. You're listening to Under the Moon, a weekly astrology show celebrating diversity and other astro-musing adventures with me and Pat McHugh. This is May 11th, 2013. Pat and I are delighted to have a wonderful guest on today's show, the incomparable Barbara Harper. Barbara is the author of a wonderful book, Gentle Birth Choices, and is an international advocate for gentle birth and water births. Could there be more synchronistic time than to have this show about birth on Mother's Day Eve? I'm so excited. I'd like to dedicate our show today to our mothers, to ourselves, whether we are mothers or not, and to the great Mother Earth that sustains and nourishes us. In a minute, I will introduce my co-host and friend, Patricia McHugh. Pat and I have been studying and discussing a new cosmic perspective for humanistic development, using astrology as our language to describe how we and the cosmos reflect each other. And with love, I wanted to remember today our friend Joanne McParlin. Joanne was a wonderful midwife that lived in the Catskill Mountain, upstate New York, facilitating sacred home births and living her Aquarian dream. We love you, Joanne. Now, astrology this week. Everyone knows we had a new moon solar eclipse. You could see it in Australia, but we could feel it here in the U.S. This begins a new lunar cycle culminating with a lunar eclipse on the 25th of May, Eastern Time, 12:26 a.m., in Sagittarius. A full moon in Sagittarius is the perfect opportunity for asking questions as the sun is in Gemini. In the quest for deeper truth, Sagittarius, are we aligned with our highest wisdom? Are we in denial of our own negativity that holds us bound to limitation? It takes a lot of courage to face the truth, but it is also our liberation. Life is limited or expanded by what we believe is impossible or possible. With strong emotional courage, enhanced by the energy of the Sagittarian full moon eclipse, we can clarify our goals and see them to fruition. If your personal planet, sun, moon, or ascendant, are around the fifth degree of Sagittarius, or in any of the mutable signs, Gemini, Pisces, or Virgo, you too will experience a shift in your personal life that resonates to the energy shift that is happening in the world. If you need a copy of your horoscope, I would be happy to give that to you if you don't have one. I think it's interesting and good to know where the placements of Jupiter, Sagittarius, and Mercury, Gemini, are in your horoscope at birth. If you are on my email newsletter, I send those brief explanations to those who would like to have that, and which house the full moon eclipse will be activated. I'm recording daily astro moon messages. You can see those and listen to those on my Facebook page, Joni Roth Astrologer. Anyone who is on the Moon Message email newsletter is also welcome to a copy of their horoscope. My email is Juoni, J-U-O-N-I, moonmessage@aol.com, and I would be happy to send that to you. Please include your name, date, time, and city or town of birth with your request. So as we go into the topic, let's presume that the moment we arrive here in this incarnation expresses our soul's desire to evolve with all the opportunities and challenges that encourage that necessary development. To quote Carl Jung, or to paraphrase Carl Jung, we are born at a given moment in a given place, and we have the qualities of the year and of the season in which we are born. What I get from this is that we have a oneness with this time continuum. Your horoscope is a cosmic picture or a blueprint of this journey, your present lifetime, and the planets have their journey. The more exact the time, the clearer the picture. As an astrologer for over 20 years, I've had the pleasure of working with several midwives, all of whom are awesome ladies, but actually so busy as the baby comes out, catching the baby, checking the time is not always the priority. So as an incentive, I would be delighted to email you baby charts for your newborns. For midwives and doulas, you can give them to parents as a gift. For parents, it's great to have a copy of your child's horoscope. Just have someone record the exact time. I also do baby's first reading for curious parents by appointment. So having said that, Pat, why don't you introduce our guest?
I'd love to. I'm sorry, we're having a very bad thunderstorm here, if you hear anything. Our guest this week, I'd like to welcome to Under the Moon this week, Barbara Harper, who Joni already mentioned, is an internationally known advocate for water birth. She is the author of Gentle Birth Choices, which is also a DVD, and she's also produced Birth into Being, the Russian Water Birth Experience. Midwives and parents alike have called her video programs the most inspiring birth videos ever produced. You can visit Barbara's website at www.waterbirth.org, or you can contact her at 954-821-9125. We're honored to have her here as our guest today on Under the Moon.
Thank you both. That was absolutely lovely. And Joni, I loved your message for today and the topic of Mother's Day weekend, the time of birth. How appropriate is this?
I know. We certainly are in rhythm with our heart's intention.
Absolutely. And I'd also like to lift up and remember our mutual friend, Joanne McParland. You know, we were both nurses, and mm-hmm. she came to my home in Santa Barbara, California, in, oh, I'm trying to think back, I think it was around 1988, and lived at my house for about 6 months while she figured out what to do. And I said, you should be a midwife. And she went with me. I was studying midwifery at the time as well, and had already been to many births. And she went with me to some births and met pregnant women. And I sat down with her and typed out her midwifery school application. I did the typing. She did the dictation. So I felt invested in her career for her whole life. And we were very close. And when she graduated from midwifery school at Downstate in New York, she called me up and she goes, okay, now I have all the book knowledge. Now where do I go to learn how to be a midwife? And I sent her to a birth center in McAllen, Texas, on the border of Mexico, that was run by a sister, a nun, who eventually was president of the American College of Nurse Midwives and president of the Midwives Alliance of North America. That's Sister Angela Murdo. And Sister Angela is still with us, and she just retired, and she's one of my mentors and teachers, and both of us, Joanne and myself, both learned so much about honoring women and really paying attention to babies. And that's a very important thing for midwives to get, that it's, and mothers, that there's, the mother might give birth 5 or 6 times, at least once or twice, you know, but the baby only has one entrance. They only bought one ticket for a trip on Spaceship Earth, and that moment of entrance is very, very, very important. And we push mothers to push the baby out, get the baby out. And today we speed it up with drugs and induce women. And I want to talk to you about, how do we let the baby out? How do we encourage mothers to let the baby out and honor the timing that the baby comes with? There's some things in psychology and physiology that I would like to discuss if we have time today.
I'm so interested to hear it. It makes perfect sense to me that once you've made a decision, even though you forget it immediately, that you're coming in the moment you're coming, that journey down the birth canal out into what we call life is an experience that really shouldn't be that interrupted.
Well, in my career, which has spanned now 41 years, starting out as a nursing school graduating nurse, going into obstetrics and then neuroscience. I was a neurosurgical intensive care nurse, and then a cardiac nurse, and then a pediatric nurse, and then midwife. So I had this kind of circuitous journey, but I've witnessed and learned along the way that every single human being from conception on is biologically programmed. There's a biological imperative in the brain, in the formation of the brain, that says you must be born. Mm-hmm. And the second biological imperative says you must attach to a breast. This is basic mammalian physiology. And modern medicine has come in and said, you must be born on a time schedule and in a certain time frame. And if you're not born in that time frame, then we're going to cut you out. And that's what's led to the cesarean section epidemic on this whole planet. I've traveled to 52 countries to study birth or teach about birth, and the cesarean and induction epidemic around the world is alarming and frightening. When we look at places like Mexico City and Monterrey, Mexico, and Panama City in Panama and Quito, Ecuador, You just name a town, and I'll tell you what the C-section rate is, and it's bordering 90%. 90% in some of these places where babies, their time of birth is being decided sometimes by the doctor on the very first prenatal visit. When the woman walks in, they write on a prescription pad, here's your surgery date, instead of your due date. Here's your surgery date. And so I go around the world fighting that. My mission statement is, I came here to change the way we welcome babies into the world. And that's what I do. I teach about the normal physiology, not pathology of birth, but the physiology and what happens in birth and that first hour to the development of human consciousness. That's what I teach about.
You mean uninterrupted birth?
I call it undisturbed birth, yes.
Undisturbed birth, yes. It certainly makes sense.
But what are the consequences of disturbing that biologically programmed imperative that says, I know the way out? You know, I have watched women in a state of sumadhi, high or deep meditation, high consciousness, where they're chanting throughout the whole entire birth process, and they look down into the water and see that their baby is now floating in the water. They don't even know that the baby has emerged. They're so beyond the physical and more into the spiritual realm as they're birthing this child that it bypasses the physical in some ways and allows the baby to express all of its biological imperatives and its normal hidden reflexes. The baby has reflexes to get itself out. And mm-hmm. we fight that. We fight it all the time, with pain and fear and dread and the feelings that women experience when they stay on the physical plane instead of going into the spiritual realm as they're giving birth.
Well, also, the baby is so connected psychically, emotionally, interdependently with the mother that if the mother is relaxed and in a high spiritual state, the baby just stays in theirs. It just it's logical that the baby just starts to learns the stress of what the world as an environment is.
The baby is always in a theta state. The baby resonates, and I always tell mothers as they're preparing for the birth process, the baby has the highest consciousness at this point because mm-hmm. it's the most connected to God. It's the most connected to that universal source spirit. Mm-hmm. And the entrance into the world starts wiring the brain either for connection, either I'm connected to the universe or I'm separated from it. And birth creates that veil, that illusion of separation by how you handle it, by how you greet this new being. I used to wear a pin that said, Member Planetary Welcoming Committee, and that's what we have to evoke in the people that surround this mother and this baby, and instead of making it a potential train wreck, make it a spiritual experience. When I bring the discussion of the divine into the birth room, I see doctors sometimes in my classes and my workshops. I see them start crying because everybody wants to be honored in that way, and we recognize that most of us were not.
Well, everybody kind of has a subconscious memory of what it really was like for them.
Not and kind of. They do, absolutely.
Yeah.
Babies remember their birth. They grow up, and it's in our very cellular memory. It's called an intrinsic memory. It's kind of like walking over to the wall and setting the thermostat. And our birth experience, our source experience, either sets that thermostat for saying, I am a divine being of a loving God, and I'm here to do my mission, and every fiber of the universe welcomes me. That sets the thermostat for complete resiliency, able to be part of life, in life, aggressively adopting this I can do anything kind of spirit. And if we set the thermostat so that it's uncomfortable, then we're disconnected from that. Mm-hmm. And we start saying, I must have done something wrong. There's not enough for me. I'm not enough. There's not enough love. There's not enough of anything. I call it chronic not enoughness. And that produces a being that does not have enough resiliency. So any little bit of stress triggers that endocrine system, triggers that autoimmune system, so that it throws them into dis-ease and catabolism, breaking down instead of building up. Instead of growth and repair, we're always spending time just trying to hold on.
Yeah. You know, I've looked every person that has come to me for a session, a reading, a counseling session, whatever. You know, you always look at their birth moment, which is their horoscope. And very often I could see that there was a real challenge in the birth. And I would ask people, and almost always it would be, you know, it was a difficult birth, or the mother had toxicity, or, you know, they were worried, and things like this, because you can see, based really on the moon, which rules all of us and our habits and the way we live and how we're born is all ruled by the moon. And obviously, I'm a moon girl. So I think it's a very fascinating thing that you're saying. And I'm just wondering if we can do the enlightened version of our charts from the beginning, what we could accomplish as human beings.
Oh my gosh. It's what we call the crystal children and the indigo children. When I first started discovering other mothers that had water births, I put a little ad in Mothering Magazine, which is no longer in print, it's online version, but I put this little ad that said, water birth mothers, send me your stories. I had two beautiful water births in 1984 and 1986, and I want to share that with other mothers. If you experienced a water birth, please write. And I put my P.O. box in. I still remember it was in Santa Barbara, and I got hundreds of letters. This was, I think, 1989, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of letters. I had a water birth. I had a water birth. I had a water birth. And that's what started Water Birth International 25 years ago. It wasn't 1989. It was 1987. It was before we started. And one of the questions that I eventually put onto a survey that I sent all these mothers was, if you have given birth more than your current water baby, and the other child was not born in water, did you notice a difference in your water baby's approach to life and milestones? Did you notice a difference in any way on how they were in the first few hours to few weeks to few months of life? And I have 2,700 surveys, and every single woman, and there's about not quite a little more than half of those surveys, women had had more than one baby that was not born in water. And those women, all of them said, yes, there was a physical, emotional, and spiritually noticeable difference in the waterborn baby as opposed to the baby that was born in a typical hospital birth.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot of things going on if we take the layers down and look at them. But one of the most significant things that I have discovered is what happens in the first hour immediately after the birth, what happens in how the baby downloads the information from being born, and if the baby is separated from its mother for any reason, and that's bold, 67 type, any reason. If you take the baby away for any reason, you know, by cutting the cord and moving the baby over to a table, to even for a few minutes to wipe it down and give it a shot and put stuff in its eyes and then give it back to the mother, the baby's brain wires differently than if you leave that baby on the mother undisturbed for the first hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours after birth.
Barbara, excuse me, I just wanted to ask you something, because when you look at the definition of birth, this is one of the questions I always have, because I figure, in my mind, we are different. We all have a different rate, and we have a different element that predominates. I was wondering if, well, first of all, the moment of birth, I was reading a lot of astrologists consider cutting the umbilical cord the moment of birth, which seems unnecessary for you to be here and alive.
And also
the idea of the first breath. And I've heard stories from midwives that babies come out and they don't always breathe right away. But I consider them alive, right? I mean, they will breathe, but sometimes it isn't immediate. What do you think the moment of birth is?
Well, that's a very interesting question, because I have witnessed water births where the baby comes out and swims around in the water for a minute or two, you know, 1 or 2 minutes prior to coming up onto the mother. Do I consider that a birth? Yeah, the baby is in an expanded womb. It's in a womb with a view now. It can move its limbs, it can stretch, it can blink its eyes. It might swallow a little water, but it's impossible for the baby to take a breath. And my normal weight after the full body is completely expelled from the mother, my normal weight is about 10 seconds. And the mother reaches down into the water and picks the baby up onto her chest. And as long as that baby has a heart rate that's greater than 100, it doesn't need to take a breath. And as a matter of fact, it doesn't need to cry. The baby will start breathing. Babies actually exhale before they inhale. They get rid of the carbon dioxide, and then the oxygenation starts happening. And it's an amazing physiologic process that switches the baby over from an aquatic mammal to an air-breathing mammal. It's just absolutely amazing that this divine presence of the universe thought of everything to get us our ticket onto spaceship Earth. But the umbilical cord physiologically never needs to be cut, period, end of story. It never needs to be cut. This whole thing of cut the cord,
it'll
cut
just
the cord,
shrivel.
It's actually, the baby needs all the blood that's in the placenta to go into the baby in order to have a full cardiac circulation, a full venous circulation, and full capillaries for its skin, its liver, its kidney, its gut, its brain, its lungs, for all of that to function better and to prevent infection and have a better immune system, it needs all the blood. And our practices have absolutely been crippling the health and safety of all of our citizens all these years. And that's one thing that we started doing in water births. We never cut the cord. We would wait, maybe the placenta would be born by itself. It's part of the baby. The baby and the placenta are connected. And so the placenta just comes out on its own from the mother. The mother's job is now done, and the baby is connected to the placenta. And some people somewhere along the line said, well, we have to, the baby is a product, and we have to warehouse the baby, so we have to, and the placenta is just a byproduct of conception, and had no concept that it was beneficial for the baby. Mm-hmm. So we divorced ourselves from normal human physiology, and now we're going back with it and understanding in a water birth, we just wait for the placenta. It plops out. And then, yes, after it plops out, the only purpose it serves is to cocoon the baby with the mother, because nobody wants to walk around holding a baby and a placenta at the same time, you know. So, but honestly speaking, it's all
walk effort. Does it hurt to, like, bend someone's placenta? Bend the umbilical cord.
It doesn't hurt.
It doesn't hurt.
But
okay.
I've seen babies react when you cut it. And but one of the things, we don't think the baby's conscious and thinking and understanding. So everything that I do with the baby during the birth process, during the pregnancy, immediately after, I explain to the baby. The mother, I'll tell the mother, say, welcome, welcome. I've been waiting for you. Thank you for coming. And I'll tell the baby, thank you for coming. You have an enormous, wonderful mission to carry out, and I'm here to support you. I recognize who you are. It's like the movie Avatar, when they plug into each other and they see each other. You look into the eyes of that newborn and you say, I see you. I understand you. I hear you.
Yeah.
And when the baby receives that, then their thermostat gets set for connection instead of separation.
Well, I think that's something we could really use hearing any time in our life too. You know,
absolutely.
Welcome, you have a mission and I want to support you. This is something that is really good for people of all ages.
That's what your astrology does for people. It reminds them that they have a mission. It kind of gives you a roadmap of, you know, what was your mission? You know, why did you come here? What do you expect to accomplish?
Absolutely. It's not even just that, but just feeling like you. In not having to fragment or disassociate with pieces of yourself that you don't know what to do with necessarily, but are very key in the life that you really need to live. And sometimes you don't remember. And I think coming to a reading, it very much is like that sometimes. The best reading, when people walk out feeling centered. And that's my goal in my mind, to help wake up the spirit of that person if they're having a hard time with that.
It, at any time, it's not about predicting the future or, you know, saying, oh, well, this is where your talents are. You should focus on this. No, it's taking that raw material and resetting the thermostat. It's resetting that ability to have resiliency in the world and to be able to listen more carefully to who you are and how you resonate with the world. that's what a good reading does for me. You know, mm-hmm. my a wonderful person gave me a birth astrology chart for my son Samuel. He was born October 27th, 1984. He'll be 29 this year, just after midnight. And the person that gave me the chart then also did a 37 typed written pages before the age of computers, and told me, I have a grand alignment baby. Everything in his chart is conjunct with everything else. He only has all of his planets, his moon, everything is all in the fifth house. And the message that I got from that was that he would be extremely creative, that he would be extremely focused. And as a mother, you know, when he started talking at 7 months, full sentences, I was like, uh-oh, I'm in trouble, you know. And then I would remember his chart and say, oh, well, you know, he could sit and look at a painting for hours as a child, hours. And he could build Legos for days and days and days and days. And when he was 12 years old, he told me, I'm going to be an engineer and I'm going to build things. And
he was born in the night, right? What time was he born?
Just after midnight.
Mm-hmm.
So he's, and that helped me so much as a mother, knowing that, you know, he has this wham bam creative spiritual part there that. I mean, every child has that, but if I know the where the thermostat is set, then I can adjust my mothering to encourage those things. So the books I picked out to read and things like that really.
He was born in 1984,
well.
Barbara.
Yeah.
I just made his horoscope.
Yeah, that's great.
Well, he's a very intense person. His son and Pluto are together, so he came here from. He brought in with him a lot of who he already was, and
yes.
And he already was quite a powerful being. And
yes.
His moon was in Sagittarius, and it was
yeah.
together with another outer planet, Uranus, making
mm-hmm.
him. A world traveler, a freedom
oh
lover, a natural activist, you know, or anything you wanted to be, and many different things. But when people have their charts concentrated like that, they become very good at what they like. They really,
yeah.
really like what they like.
Oh, he's...
And
he's
likes art.
Yeah, everything that he has attempted, he has become accomplished in. And he had more stamps in his passport by the time he was 10 than I had by the time I was 30. I took him everywhere, and he goes around
Wonderful.
The world every week. He's in a different country with the work that he's passionate about. It's cancer research, and he's just totally passionate and loves to go in and schmooze with all the PhD, you know, medical people and doctors and he's passionate about finding a cure for cancer but my mothering was I would always remind myself to have patience with him because he was so focused and because he was that way. And
well, he experienced you as being his inspiration, I think, of someone who isn't going to play by the rule book and isn't going to read all the directions, is going to go for an innovative, excited approach to life.
Yeah,
because
he and
your
I
moon
are
is your mother.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're best buds. We're
That's great.
At 29, he still holds my hand.
Nice. So he's having his Saturn return this year.
Yeah.
Good time for him
yeah.
to have a little look at his horoscope.
Yeah, yeah, he's getting married in the fall, and he always
See
said
that,
he'd be
a
married
commitment.
Before he was
Very
30.
Good.
Yeah.
He's right
so,
on track.
Yeah, so not only being an activist all my life, you know, and making them recycle when all three of my kids were younger. They earned money by recycling. That was their allowance. They had to pick up trash and recycle pop cans and water bottles and pop bottles, and they got to keep all of the money. And so they were going through garbage cans and everything and recycling.
That was very cool in the 80s, Barbara.
That was. They got a little tedious. It was a little tedious after they were like 15 and 16. They were too cool to go through garbage
cans.
They
wanted bigger allowances.
So, yeah, they got jobs then. But, no, I really think checking, you know, I don't want to put so much emphasis on the time of birth, but my next book actually really does focus on the psychological, physiological, and the spiritual aspects of birth in the first hour. It's called Embracing the Miracle.
Beautiful.
Abrazo el Milagro, Embracing the Miracle, how pregnancy, birth, and the first hour influence human potential. And I just get so disturbed when we rush women through the process. My question to everybody is, how can we assist women? How can we help women to let their babies out? How can we help them make this a spiritual experience instead of just on the physical plane? How can we assist them to see this baby as the divine being that it is? I even don't want to call it a baby. I want to call it the new human being that is joining, you know, that you've called forth. You've said, I'm ready. I'm ready to be used as a vessel. Choose me. Hello, choose me. And these divine beings say, oh, you're ready. Let's put you together with that guy. Let me take that genetic material and use that environment so that I can free my karma from the last life that I was in. Yeah.
This sounds like it's a good fantasy, but it seems to me that people wind up being together to go through certain situations and grow from them. But I like your story. Sounds great.
Yeah. The baby's kind of this new human being is like the production manager. And says, you know, let's get these two genetic materials together, and the more we work on that, our genetic material prior to conception, the better we eat, the more conscious we are, the easier time this new human being is going to have to be in this world. The less maladies it will have, the less psychosis it will have. And the same goes for the birth experience. You know, I've never called it labor. Why do we have the names that we associate with hard work? It can be ecstatic. It can be joyful. It can be orgasmic.
Well, I think, yes, it sounds great, except it hurts. But not always, you said. You can transcend that. But I'm just thinking what we can do. What we can do as a society is really support the idea that being a midwife is a wonderful, wonderful profession, and that women need to choose and educate themselves in different ways to have birth. And it's so important that all of us accept that even though this is the ancient way, this is the best way, the natural way. And Pat, I just wanted Pat to give us our little station break and thank our sponsor. Just a second,
yes.
Barbara.
I'd like to thank our sponsor, Here Be Monsters and Gwendolyn Holden Berry. Gwendolyn has a website, daughtersofisis.com, where you'll find her collection of amazing oils and a wide range of flower essences, incense, candles, and soap. Gwendolyn also has a radio show on Here Be Monsters.
The Consciousness Network and the Sunday show, too. And I don't know who's on here listening, but people listen to this show, and there are all kinds of people on it. And it's Gwen is just a great person, and we thank her. And I also want to give a shout-out to Kim G., for all the support she gives us here on Under the Moon. And to you, Pat, I want to thank you, too, and
well,
Barbara.
Thank you.
So did we say you're welcome? I see you, and I want to support you.
Joni, I also wanted to take a moment to remind people how they can get in touch with you and Barbara.
Okay,
if
great.
If you'd like to make an appointment with Joni, you can call her office at 561-330-4040. Joni has a website, which is it's brand new, actually, and under construction. It is JoniRossAstrologer.com. That's Joni, J-O-N-I. You can also like her on Facebook. Her Facebook is Joni Ross Astrologer. Joni does almost daily moon messages, which are both recorded and in text, which are extraordinarily helpful and lovely to get every day. And what else did I...
You can go to the website if you want to hear the podcast of this the show, or tell your friends to go listen if they want to hear. Such an amazing guest, and I'm learning so much from Barbara, as I always do.
Absolutely fascinating.
And
I'm
also they can
here.
Email directly to Joni at JoniRossAstrologer.com to be able to receive this, their horoscope and the explanations of how the lunations affect your chart. So coming on this show, it's a very good idea to have your horoscope in front of you, because we will be talking about different configurations that are going on, lunations, and if your horoscope degree comes up, then there can be some insights that would be helpful, and we want to help. So let's go back to our interview with Barbara. We wanted to ask you, what did you suggest for people that were being told they need cesarean sections, and what can people do to find out if that's really true if a doctor says they need to have it?
Well, there's one thing about being scheduled for a cesarean section. If a doctor has a higher than 50% cesarean section rate, go find another doctor. Because go find yourself a midwife. The World Health Organization recommends that no tertiary care center in any part of the world, third world, developing country, or first world infrastructure, should have a cesarean section rate higher than 15%. And if you look at what cesareans actually do in the long term of health costs, the benefit of avoiding the birth process by scheduling a C-section is far, far outweighed by the costs of long-term health care. You're decreasing the mother's overall health. You're decreasing her fertility. You're decreasing the baby's health. I mean, I could spend, there's a significant chapter in my new book about this, but it's not an easy procedure. Yes, the doctors, obstetricians in the United States are highly trained surgeons. And in most of the world, an obstetric career means you learn how to do surgery. You learn how to do cysarian sections. You learn how to do hysterectomies. You learn how to do oophorectomies. You know, all of those things. You don't learn how to support a woman to have a natural birth, an undisturbed birth. You are not taught that. You're not taught nutrition. Right. You're not taught epigenetics. You're not, you know, you don't focus on the normal physiology. You focus only on the pathology. Midwives, whether it's a certified professional midwife that does home birth or a certified nurse midwife that does either home or hospital or birth center births, CPMs also do birth centers. Here in Florida, we have 28 state-certified birth centers outside of hospitals, and seek that out. Find all the information. Find all the go on and look at VBAC facts, vaginal birth after cesarean section, and look at that even before you have your first baby.
They often work out really fine, right?
Oh, totally, totally.
Arm
obstetric maternity care, our obstetric focused maternity care system is run by insurance companies, and it's called risk management, and that is not what honors the human spirit. It honors the bottom line dollar, and there's so many things. If you look at the numbers of countries around the world that have the lowest cesarean rates and the best birth outcomes, Japan, Denmark, Sweden, Norway, UK, Holland. What do all of those countries have in common? Midwives are the caretakers, the gatekeepers for pregnancy. You think you're pregnant, you go see a midwife, and if you have a medical condition underlying your pregnancy, or you develop a medical condition during your pregnancy, a consulting obstetrician will come in. In England, there's 37,000 midwives. For every one obstetrician, there's 250 midwives. And in the United States, we have 11,000 midwives. Our population is so much larger than the UK. We have 11,000 midwives, and for every one midwife, there's 250 obstetricians. So I'm not saying get rid of the obstetricians, but I have been able in my career as an educator to transform the lives of many obstetricians to take to heart the information on the psychology of birth and the spirituality of birth. And their lives are transformed by it. They cry over it, and they say, one doctor wrote to me, in my 37 years of delivering babies, I've never been so excited. Thank you so much for bringing water birth to our hospital. So we can change things. We absolutely can.
Well, you know, in terms of the astrology, it's very interesting, because whether someone had a cesarean section, that's how they were born, or induced labor, or whatever, the moment you're born, you're born. That's your horoscope. Okay, that's fine. But if you think about what the ascendant really determines in the horoscope in terms of interpretation, it's your modus operandi. It's the way you want to live your life. So if you don't have the ascendant that you naturally would want to have, it'd be very interesting to find how many people that were in a cesarean section when they came out of their mom versus the people that came either faster than the mom expected or later and came when they did, to see the difference in how much that person kind of really owns their ascendant zodiacal energy and in what way and how. And I also wonder if, I think that would be a really interesting study to do, just to see, because it is very important, because the ascendant isn't only your modus operandi, it's kind of your window looking out, your horoscope's how it feels to be inside you, And then the ascendant is sort of the bridge between you and everything outside you and how you relate to that. So that whole meridian of ascendant, descendant, myself and other, it all is changed in what time you're born, not just the day, but what time, what moment exactly.
You know, the father of my son Samuel, my husband Harry, didn't want to live with a Scorpio. He was afraid that he was going to have a Scorpio. So he said, call the acupuncturist and let's get your birth process going. And she came over and she put needles in me and hooked me up to a machine. And I was having really strong contractions. So what would he have been had he not been a Scorpio? He would have, if he'd been born on the 21st of October instead of the 27th. And that's what he kept saying, I can't live with a Scorpio. I can't live with a Scorpio. But there was no way. No, there was no way that
Scorpio. He got a super Scorpio with the Pluto Sun conjunct in a degree.
Exactly.
Oh, my
goodness.
Well, Harry,
so,
he did all right anyway. Yeah.
He did fantastically. Yeah, may Harry's memory be a blessing forever. So, Sam got exactly and did exactly what he wanted to do. He came swimming out of me like a little dolphin in the dark of the night with just candlelight and Paca Bell playing on the harp and it was so dark, as a matter of fact, that I couldn't find him. I had to follow his umbilical cord to find him in the water.
Well, because the moon was new. He was born in the sign of Scorpio, and Sagittarius is the next sign. So there wasn't even really a slither yet. So people that are born in the new moon, and the dark moon especially, they don't need a whole lot of light to get things done. You know, they kind of intuitively, and of course, being born in the new moon, like Sam was, he's anxious to do it. So, maybe he took a few extra days, but he wants to get it going. And let's get something. Okay, I'm ready for something new. Being Scorpio is good because it's a fixed sign, so he doesn't go too far off course, but he needs some action. He needs a lot of action.
Yeah, well, After having been to over 600 births and worked with over 7,000 women in my counseling and my classes and pool rentals and multiply that, you know, times 100 with all of the people that I've talked to around the world, every person is so unique and every person needs to be respected for who they are and what they came here to do. And that's my primary message.
Absolutely. Especially you, Barbara. And we're so grateful you did.
Thank you.
I knew you for how many years before we actually met?
I would say probably, 7 or 8 years. I heard of you for at least 10 years because you were a friend of Joanne's and so was I.
It was great to meet you. And all the other midwives that I've met through Joanne. I think it's a calling. And Joanne always said to me that one day she's going to stop doing births and she's going to do deaths. Because she had this really rapid cancer that she had to pass from, she determined to do hers. And she had this glorious, glorious, sacred experience in her own passing that she did.
Yeah. And she's my inspiration. I want to do it the same way.
Definitely.
What
else do I want to talk about before we go off the air? It's certainly been awesome having you on.
Oh, I just wanted to say that I'm so thrilled that there are people like you out there, Barbara, who are spreading the word about natural birth and water birth. It's such an amazing thing.
Thank you. My pleasure. I don't know anything else.
Well,
and it's people like Joni that help keep me on track.
Yeah, my pleasure, my honor. And again, I just really want to say I wasn't kidding. Any midwife out there who wants me to make those baby charts for them, it's my gift. You know, it's certainly nice to know the time and to. I know with my birth, I'd always heard my mother describe my birth, and she'd always say the time, and my mother had this great memory. And then finally, I wrote to the Hall of Records for my long form of my birth certificate, and it was a half hour difference. And I said, Mom,
wow.
How could you say that it was this time instead of the real time, 11:05? And she said, oh, the nurses got together and they had a coffee, and then they made the report.
Yeah.
She said, I'm sure that's what happened. So, you know, whatever time that we think we were born, there could have been a mistake. It could have been the clock was wrong or so, or any reason. So I think it's a good thing to do if you really like to use astrology, to have an astrologer look at your chart and go from a few important dates and let them check the angularity of your chart to see if the timing seems right. And this is something anyone can do that likes to do a lot of investigation with astrology, and it's kind of takes a while, but to have your chart rectified, because actually I think my chart was somewhere between what they said and something between what my mother said. So if you can put down the exact time, it saves your kid some investigation and maybe some money, because it's not cheap to do a rectification. So please use me for that, and come hear us again next week at 4:00 on Here Be Monsters Radio in Blog Talk Radio. And Pat, do we have anything else? Do you want to give the phone numbers again?
Yes, I will. If you'd like to make an appointment with Joni, you can call her office at 561-330-4040. And if you'd like to contact Barbara, her website is www.waterbirth.org, and her contact number is 954-821-9125.
You know, I'm hardly ever home to answer the phone, so it's best to do email, just info@waterbirth.org. And I get my emails on my cell phone, so that I can answer immediately, more immediately.
Great.
Thank you, Pat.
Fabulous.
Great. So everyone have a wonderful Mother's Day, and we'll see you back here under the moon with Joni Ross, astrologer, and Pat McHugh. Thank you so much, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.